Good evening, all. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and it's time for us to do something together. And that's what we're doing tonight. And what we're choosing to do together is to focus our attention. That in itself is enough. That's a good beginning, but we happen to be focusing our attention on the book, The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. And what we're working on tonight is sacrifice number 13. And that one's called The Sacrifice of Health. The subtext of it is Super Life. I just want to make a quick comment on the beginning of it. When we talk about the sacrifice of health, the term is meant in a very narrow context. And you'll understand the context if you put the time into studying the chapter a bit or the sacrifice a bit. Don't think of it in a just arbitrary concept like some of the desert fathers from the Philokalia, and what they were doing in terms of sacrifice of health. A different thing altogether. That's not what we're talking about, right?
Okay, well, I'm not sure what the distinction is, but as far as being a hermit in the desert?
Hermits,
like
giving
starving
up,
yourself?
Starving yourself,
yeah.
Extreme heat, extreme cold. These are not what is being discussed in this particular sacrifice. That's a totally different form of work than the work we're doing here. And for those that are set for that type of work, it's legitimate, and work, something comes from it. So we're talking about something different. So let's pay attention, let's get into it, and let's just work our way through this particular writing that we got from EJ some time ago. And we are on page, it starts on 221, and I'll read a bit from 222, and we'll stop as we go through it, Ivan, because we need to delve into each one of these paragraphs. So, to begin, in this stage, one learns to make super powerful efforts because it is understood that the ordinary centers can only be burned away through the use of super energies, when the power center is in use beyond the level of ordinary effort. So let's rewind a little bit. Because it is understood that the ordinary centers can only be burned away through the use of super energies. Why is that? What's happening there? What path is being indicated to us? Ivan, you're here. Anybody? So.
Well, how about why do we want to burn away the ordinary centers?
Okay.
Is that what you're driving at?
Yes.
That's what it says here.
Okay, so it's talking about burning them away. What have we been talking about in the sacrifices since the sacrifice called Entering the Corridor of Madness? We've been talking about starting to form a platform where we're living a life that we're no longer standing in the machine as our essential, as our guide, as our primary guide. And we're talking about starting to move to a world where our guide is our own essential self. Okay? So once you do that, guess what? We've all been functioning all our life through the ordinary centers somehow. Mental centrum, physical centrum, emotional centrum. We've been using those all of our life. And where did we get the blueprints to use those centrums?
Well, there was a previous sacrifice where the moment in life was mentioned where we decide, there's a decision that I made.
The Great Betrayal.
To have a personality, to have to crystallize a machine in order to survive, to navigate
yeah.
here, to do this.
Okay, so we accepted the tutelage of the world in terms of showing us how to operate in the world. So those centrums, they were established for good reason. They were established to give us sustainability, is the word nowadays, how to live in the world, okay? They were telling us, here's what you do to, here's how you should think, here's when you should emote, here's how your body should move through the world. But now we're talking about something new, the use of super energies when the power center is in use beyond the level of the ordinary effort. And I want to give a practical example of this. And I'm wondering, are the dosts online?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, we have a comment.
So, to what the dose, the comment that Molly is reading is that the dosts are saying to be able to handle more energy, to handle more, to become lightning rods. And that's precisely what I wanted to inquire about. And I've watched them in concert just once. But when I did, it was very clear that they knew how to get to what I call the invocational space. They knew how to stand in that space. And the energy of the invocation then, which includes working partly with a crowd, but their own efforts are the guide to that. Now, when you are in that space, when you are in that space of, I call it a kind of celestial surrender, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, like a particular willingness of acquiescence. This is to be chewed on a bit. When you're in that space and that starts to come into you and that's available to you, what I say is at that moment, mark that space. So yes, you're doing the performing, you're very involved in that, and it flows from a different part now. It no longer flows from the mechanicality of the machine. I've heard a lot of music. I was just reminded me of a saxophone. I've heard some remarkable saxophone that is just so alive. But I've also heard really competent saxophone players that weren't alive. And it's like night and day. If you have the ears to hear that, and the answer is that we do have the ears to hear that. Okay.
Yeah, who has ears, let him hear. By the way, that's what EJ fairly often comes back to his comparison in that regard in dance, that he always says that Maria Talchu was a wonderful, wonderful technical ballerina, absolutely competent and terrific, but that compared to Chita Rivera, you were not looking at with the ballerina, with a classical ballerina, you're not looking at an awakened state of the machine where as soon as you see Chita Rivera come on camera, on stage in West Side Story or whatever, man, yeah, that's alive. This is alive. The spark is there.
Now, here's an interesting point. They are willing to be alive. Okay? It's not an enhancement of the ego thing. There's a really interesting story about Nijinsky. Nijinsky went mad, as we know, and he had a whole series of journals that he wrote about his God intoxication.
Okay, I didn't know. I don't know the Nijinsky story.
Yeah, this is specifically the Nijinsky diaries.
Wow.
And when he was so far beyond all the other dancers that people just couldn't conceive of how he did what he did, because it wasn't coming from the mechanicality, it was coming from the infinite creativity of the essential self. They say that he could leap higher and farther than anybody else. And he said that his key to that is that the second he left ground, he went absolutely motionless. And he seemed to stop in midair as he floated. But he did this one performance in Russia that was very disturbing. He got on stage as the solo dancer in the opening act. And he was on stage, I heard, for 15 minutes before he moved. Think of standing in that space that long before you're ready to move. And it's that willingness to allow the invocation to come in, and that's what we're talking about here. These are not simple things, and it's not something that we're talking about to enhance one's ego here. And I do tell you that at times, such being in such a position is frightening. What's it frightening to? The mechanicality. Okay? Okay, go ahead, Molly. Lost Horizon tells us burning away implies a permanent change. And burning your bridges, you begin to burn your bridges. This is a brilliant comment. You begin to actually leave one world and actually start to live in another land. It's literally like leaving a nation, giving up your citizenship and going to a new nation. But of course, it's not of this world, as we've spoken about. Go ahead. And Pianjo is saying it's that the burning, what is it, the burning away?
That it's the path of unity.
It's the path of unity.
Yeah, burning away its separate parts and functions.
Okay.
Replacing it with one being.
Okay.
What's that?
Stripping away the ordinary. The what? Okay, so underline that one, everybody. You know, stripping away the ordinary
to make space.
Can be excruciatingly difficult and painful. Nijinsky would agree and was willing to be there. And he wound up in a fundamental sense, in a worldly sense, insane. And it was from that point that he began to write his diaries. His diaries are, I mean, it's clear. He was, from a worldly point of view, he was nuts. And he was nuts because the foundation of his existence at that point was no longer of the world. And that's the whole thing we're talking about here in the last several sacrifices. Living a new life. And some will read this chapter and say, oh good, I will have superpowers now. Doesn't work that way, baby. You know, you can get some of those powers, and you can use them for world ego, but it will eventually down spiral, period. It will crash and burn at some point. There's what? So let's go on, Ivan. The energies of the power center will also be needed to drive the bigger and more active higher centers. We haven't understood, we don't know what those are yet. The results of the fusion of the lower ordinary centers, as Pianjo was telling us, to human beings before the work on self. I didn't quite understand that. Second part of that sentence.
it says the fusion of the lower centers common to human beings before work on self. And so this is the machine.
Yeah.
The three centrums.
So I think it's the sentence, the editing, I think it's really just distinguishing between higher centers and lower centers. And we primarily live in the lower centers. That's just who we are at the moment. That's okay. And through self-observation, that's the tool we have. We begin to see, that's mainly how I live, okay? I'm mainly in the machine. I mainly use my mechanical thinking. I mainly react emotionally like everybody else. And I basically move like the truck. So, yeah. Well, and sometimes the higher centers kick in. But boy, there has to be a willingness for that. Okay? Okay, through super effort, one is able to arouse the huge accumulator of the power center, thus enabling the teacher to direct this energy to the ordinary centers of thinking, feeling, sensing, moving, and automatic organic control. What does that all mean, Ivan? Okay. So,
well, I think this is again suggesting that, okay, on the literal level, this is talking about a school context. I mean, it's a esoteric school event where the teacher is present, you know, which is, and I think that you can find descriptions of these. Let's say in the lore, as far as tales of power are concerned, because I mean, actually, the first thing that I thought of reading this chapter is an incident that Durop describes in Warrior's Way, where he was hanging out with John Bennett. And Bennett tells him his story of how Gurdjieff put him through physical exercise, which led him to this lesson. Bennett describes to Durop that Gurdjieff deliberately taught him this lesson somehow. It was nonverbal. I mean, but you know, there's an incident. There's an experience of Bennett's, which is actually described in Warrior's Way. And I don't know if Bennett writes about it anywhere, but it has to do with surpassing his physical stamina. You know, doing something physical. He's actually digging with a shovel or something for many hours.
And we've had many experiences here, where I can remember many. But I remember early on, we had to set up a museum show by morning. We took possession of the space at midnight or something like that. And we only had it for a few days, and we had to set the show up by 10 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, well, those are the events that I remember. There's an opening time.
And
you know, so
we have to get there.
You simply have to work all night, yeah.
Now, some people concluded, gosh, we've already been up all day putting the material together. And then the phrase would come up, but I need to get some sleep. I need to get some rest.
Good luck.
And some people would spin off at that point and go get rest. Other people then had to carry the load, and literally you were physically moving stuff. I remember those big pedestals that we'd move all the time.
Yeah, right.
Those big museum pedestals, and work for hours creating a beautiful environment. It had to be aesthetically beautiful. Where did that energy come from, Ivan?
Well, call it second wind. I mean, it came from, you know, you would have to get by this point where you were desperate for a cup of coffee and nothing was open.
You had to get past the point of falling out. So don't forget.
Exhaustion.
Look at the phrase.
Yeah.
Past the point that. Your emotions need to do something different. Your body needs to be something. Or your mind can't think anymore. I mean, in those cases, it was a perfect situation because you had to think things through. You had to physically move, and you had to not react one to another. You had to operate in a certain form of excellence. Okay? where did the energy come from? Well, this is an exact example. First of all, the students that were doing this were not beginning students, not just brand new beginning, even though it would work for certain right people. It wasn't that they were beginning students. They had some inner discipline so that they knew some place to go to. We're all there. Everybody that's online right now already has this. Okay, that's not an issue. We're older. The issue is that, but, like, for instance, how could it be that we're even doing this show? Here it is at the end of the evening. Some of you, it's midnight. It's 10 o'clock at night or something, and you're still on and active with this. So where does the energy come from? That's going to be my question, Ivan, that we'll have to get to. So we were poised to do this, and then EJ would show us, okay, now go do this. Or, you know, the countless trade shows that we go to where you're standing for hours on end, and then the customer comes at the end of the day, and you have to be articulate, present, succinct, gracious. And you can do it. What is the key? Is there a key here? Is this just magic?
Wait a second. It isn't just magic, but what does anybody say online? Molly, what have we got on that? How about the dots? What do you guys say about this? Where does the energy come from?
Hang on. Hey, Simon. Simon, are you there? Simon?
Yes, David. Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, can you read the comments from Silverdale on, including your comment, please?
It begins with mine, that it says the following. Thus, this concept of super effort has to manifest in the physical activities, meaning is it this physical that we have to do? How does this apply to the emotional and intellectual activities or centers? Because
okay.
So far we have talking about physical activities and, you know, going the extra mile, but how this super effort applies to the other mental and emotional things.
We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, go ahead. Keep writing. Keep reading.
Piangio says he had CS not. This is a gentleman. Big beaches too. It was something about that you mentioned with Ivan.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Simon, he's answering to me. Simon, the super effort is the one that fuses these previously separate, disparate functions. So it seems. The form of Silverdale continues, the form of super efforts change over time in accordance with maturation of understanding and progressive development. I answer, yes, but not clear, though, in the real acts of the machine in the daily life, as examples.
Okay.
Dust says, it comes from the invocation. Piangio, yes, Silver, the effort changes and morphs. Constant and constantly changing.
Okay, wait, we passed by something there. That's what the DOS are saying.
Yes.
It comes from the invocation, because the interesting thing about the museum event, the one that David's talking about, is that there's the teacher, and that's a case where the teacher does direct the energies.
Correct.
Because it's an event, it's a process of teamwork. And the point is that it's the second wind to break through that exhaustion and have second wind is useless in that situation unless you're getting the work done.
Unless you're getting the
actual
work done. And that's why in a performance or a talk, a lecture, whatever it is, you have a objective product, in a sense. You know, like we had a show, or you have a talk to deliver.
Well, it is. It's like a way of measuring them. I mean, there's a manifestation that indicates that teamwork took place.
That the actual teamwork took place. So let's look at the word invocation for just a moment, okay?
Right.
And read the sentence again that the DOS said. It has to do with the invocation. Okay.
It comes from the invocation.
Comes from the invocation. Okay. What does that mean? Blank. It has... Pardon? Who said that? Ah, that's the word I was waiting for.
Molly said necessity.
So Molly said the word necessity. And when you put yourself in a position, I'm gonna remind everybody of a quote, Ivan,
mm-hmm.
that you'll remember.
Right.
That was posed to me before I moved out here 26 years ago. And the quote was, how can one put themselves in a position where their transformation is a necessity to the work?
Right. Or in the formulation, the one I remember, how can I put myself in the seat? How can I put myself in the place where my transformation is a necessity for the work?
And I told you this story about the first time I went to work with EJ in a trade show. It was
right.
in LA, and there were a number of people there. And literally, I walked into the show, I found the booth, and EJ was talking to a wholesale customer, or looking to make a wholesale sale. And he asked me to stand next to him. And he's going on and on about this, maybe for 5, if you know him, 10 minutes, thoroughly understanding, thoroughly engaged with the individual. And he turns to me, and he goes, right, Dave? And then he walks out of the booth in the middle of the sale to this person. Internally, I went through acrobatics. But then I caught the thread. It happened almost instantaneously, and I continued speaking to the individual. They didn't notice at all that there was a bump in the road.
That's a good one.
So in that limited sense, I was willing to put myself in that position to accept that obligation in that very narrow sense, very narrow. But I was willing in that particular moment to accept that obligation. And I had the necessity to find the invocation.
Right. But
that allowed me to go through. Go ahead.
You could also say, let's say, trying to think of what the point of view would be, from the edge of that booth, or let's say if I were standing outside that interaction and watching, you know, like another description of this might be that during this, by the end of this whole day or whatever this process was, you know, now leading up to this 10 or 15 minutes or this engagement with the customer and so on, you were in this electrical field that
uh-huh.
was worked up around this marketing effort, you know, especially by EJ Gold. And, you know, so in some way, your ordinary centrums, you know, your, what is it saying here, your ordinary use of energy, the lower ordinary centers common to human beings that you were commonly exercising, you know, could already have been accelerated, you know, up to that point where then something else could happen.
It was set aside.
Well, it's, in a sense, you went beyond, let's say you went beyond yourself. You were having to improvise at that point. You know, you were called in to improvise, but I mean, you had to be up to speed. It wasn't something you could think of yourself on the spur of the moment. It had to come out, it came out of thin air, apparently, right?
As they say,
you continued
it came out of thin air.
Yeah.
It was that I was able to, in that very narrow sense, and I mean it was, but it's a good example. It's a good example, nevertheless.
Yeah.
I was able to catch the whiff of the invocation and to go with it rather than what my head said. My brain and my emotional center, my physical centrum, panic, get out of there. But I didn't. I acquiesced to the space.
Mm-hmm.
And what mechanism did I use to do that? And the reason this is important is because all of us don't have the opportunity to be in the school, be physically here,
right,
and so on and so forth. So what mechanism did I use?
You got an answer over there, Molly? Or what is it, a good question? Must learn to make
invocation. Yeah.
Override.
Simon, you should read the
comments,
please.
Okay. So we talked about the invocation already. Dost continues, one must learn how to make the invocation of a right intensity of all other states, including exhaustion. Biff answer, I guess, to my questions, non-expression of negative emotions.
Very good.
I answer to him, thanks, Biff. So it seems that in the emotional aspect, we make an extra effort not to manifest our negative emotions.
It opens the door when you make the effort to not express the mechanical negative emotions. It opens the door of possibilities.
And I says, so it means that there is this intention to apply extra attention to the practice of that aspect, not to manifest.
Nice.
And Tianju says complete surrender.
But it's not passive surrender. This is the thing we have to remember, we have to understand. Not passive surrender, it's active surrender where you engage in the invocation. You actively engage and then you become part of it and you're part of it. Did you have something, Matt? Correct. Matt, exactly not I. And Matt is telling us that the invocation at the essential self, that it's not related to the I-ness of this. It's something else altogether. And then he used the phrase, it's related to the eternal. And we're going to get to that in just a moment.
Yeah, where
you jump this ahead.
He's suggesting a shift of time sense. But let me just say, again, relating to the ditch digging, okay, as I recall, those experiences coming from Gurdjieff's school, from the Priore or whatever, they have to do with those individuals report going beyond their physical exhaustion and having all of this negativity and so on, and then flipping. It's just flipping into this other state where they're flooded with a huge amount of energy, like flooded with a different quality of energy and a different quality of consciousness or awareness, let's say, including the emotional, intellectual, and the whole nine yards. And then what I'm thinking in regard to that is that it is a different vehicle or a different version, I think, to talk about, for instance, the museum shows that we did.
Yeah.
Or a marketing, you know, where you spend 12 hours on your feet in a marketing project. But particularly the working with a team on something like a museum exhibit, it does have that element of the word that's used in this sacrifice is fusion. There is an element of submergence of the small I, you know, of the ego and personality. You're part of this team. There is a fusion experience that you feel because you're doing something in a unified way with other with your colleagues. You know, there is a unification that happens.
And Ivan's
singleness. There's a singleness of purpose. It's like an invitation.
Yeah.
But there's also a singleness of, you know, what I'm thinking about that at going, but trying to remember those experiences. The fact is that in the emotional, this is in the moving center. There's a phenomenon that happens when you pass exhaustion. Like you have energy, you tap energy. Now you've passed exhaustion. Well, the phenomenon in the emotional and the intellectual, guess what? It's like at least in flashes, it's the waking state of the machine. There isn't any negative emotion. This is literally what it is. You're working with people. Guess, oh my gosh, guess what? It's 8:15 in the morning and the show opens at 10. So now you're having to move fast. You're having to move very smoothly, not make mistakes, get the work done. It has to be aesthetic. It has to look perfect, et cetera, et cetera. And you're so, you know, there's a selflessness. There's a unified awareness. Yeah, there's a unified awareness in that project, in this space of doing that project.
Can I say something in regard to what you say, Ivan?
Yeah.
Adding to what you say, Molly says, you won't need negative emotions. The invocations will consume them in one gulp. Plus, you won't have the energy to waste on any manifestations except those required. You may feel suddenly energetic.
Right.
Beautifully put.
So that's pretty good what you are saying, Ivan. So at my former question, indeed, this super effort manifests in the physical, let aside the invocation, of course, but it has to manifest in physical activity. It manifests in a physical activity. Because that's what you describe, Ivan.
But Simon, he's also actually describing, interestingly enough, though it may not be clear, he's also describing the fact that you go beyond the emotional conundrum and you get to a different place. We have been through countless extreme emotional issues here, correct, Ivan?
Yeah.
And
right.
If you continue to work your way through that, you wind up in a different space altogether. You continue to just be in presence. Something else happens. As Molly said, it's just swallowed by the essential self. It's swallowed in one fell swoop. The same thing intellectually. Many times we've just sat there for hours working through a problem, hour after hour after hour, and it was only the necessity of getting clarity that will enable us to continue on the problem and break through to new solutions.
Well, and you're also, if I understand what you're describing, you have a very literal. I mean, you have a very visceral experience of burning away barriers, you know, burning away dross in the lower centers or whatever, burning out, you know, burning stuff out.
We're going to move on just
to
continue. In this way, what we've just been talking about, the centrums can be fused into a single permanent identity, making food for the essence as it grows into real beingness. And I was hoping that Silverdale might want to comment on that particular.
Yeah, Dave, I would, you know, I want to remind all of us what we already know, which is that the whole of Gurdjieff's teaching, this fourth way teaching, is built on the two principles of one, self-observation, and second, self-remembering. And the work of that's described in Human Biological Machine, Practical Work on Self, and again, Joy of Sacrifices, directed toward shifting the center of our gravity from our historical personality over to our essential self. Our work, as indicated in Human Biological Machine, practical work on self and joy of sacrifice is to suggest ways to transfer the center of our gravity from our historical personality to our essential self using self-observation and self-remembering, just kind of a continual awareness that, hey, I'm here now, whether I'm being exhausted physically or negatively, I have negative emotions, or I'm not thinking about what I should be thinking about. And so anyway, and in this particular chapter, the sense I have is once you kind of are able to recognize your thinking processes, your feeling processes, and your physical manifestations, you gradually pacify them and fuse them into together, and then the essential self, which in the beginning is very weak, gradually begins to grow because it's receiving the nutrition that has previously been stolen by our ordinary personality. So,
very nice.
Yeah, this is great. This is a great formulation. I feel like. I feel like it's important to make another link for the fact that we just spent a weekend here, Saturday and Sunday, working with Kelly Rivera on prayer absolute, and you know, particularly on Sunday, EJ came in and took over that workshop, and he said a number of very very explicit, you know, very clear communications regarding prayer absolute, which is absolutely marvelous. I highly recommend the DVDs or whatever, you know, Marvette and the Institute puts together on this. But one of the things that stuck with me is that that was so strong in the way EJ expressed it was, you know, with prayer absolute, we're talking about this invocation. It's an invocational moment, an invocational process, and something that becomes an invocational career.
Nice.
An invocational, you know, vocation that you take on. This is what Kelly was addressing in her workshop, and EJ really went out of his way to talk about the idea that there is no external form for the prayer absolute. There's no fixed form. He had the question, what does prayer absolute look like? How do you do it? And you know, our tendency, the immediate reaction is, oh, we read the Hidden Work. It's this, it looks like this, and this is the formula, and so on. And he basically said, I don't know how many different times or how many different ways. No, it's not a formula. There isn't a formula. And, you know, at a given time, I taught it to a certain group of people in a certain context, and they gave it, and you're in danger of crystallizing, you know, some lesson about this into a religious formula, which it's not. But he said, what he said was that everybody should find. You need to find something that you enjoy doing, something that you can sit with, that you can do over and over again, and that you can do because you have a passion for. You know, with yep, he used Kelly as a terrific example that she was doing flamenco, that she's a flamenco dancer, and as it turned out, a flamenco singer. And then he had her sing with the band. And then the idea that he was bringing up is, well, why can't Kelly do prayer absolute like this? This is what it could look like for Kelly. It looks like flamenco. and she does it, and there's a performance, she's doing flamenco. There are people who don't know that they're going to be part of prayer absolute. So the element that's coming in there is that there's, as well as this, the shifting of the center of gravity from the historical personality to the essential self, there's, along with that, is sort of like, I believe that EJ was opening up this question of why would we do this, or what is the aim of doing this? And, you know, prayer absolute seems to be part of the answer. And the idea is that, so you're making that shift of gravity and you're going to the essential self, and then the point is that you find a career, a vocation, an activity, such as performance. It isn't going to be performance for everybody.
Not everybody.
But it could be cooking, you know, it could be writing. He addressed a question for me, I had a very important question for myself about writing and what about the artifacts of writing that I do and so on as an expression of prayer absolute. And basically the idea is that there's an energy flow, there's a sending up that you're doing with prayer absolute that can be invisible, you know, and it's something, so it's a process that you're doing that you can only do in this, you know, in this essential state.
When you're standing in the essential state.
It's the invocation. When we're talking about invocation, well, why are we having this invocation? You know, anyway, he was directing us towards prayer absolute. Let's say as performers, as cooks, as writers, as marketers, as business people or whatever.
Whatever you
very,
do.
It's very profound what he was talking about.
Is yeah. to find that space in yourself. And you find your element. You find the core of your element. What should you be doing? This is centers
yeah,
around the question
it, yeah.
that we talked about last week a little bit. Who am I? Who am I? What is the channel or the signature that you've been given? And when you're in that space, and you can do it with a kind of a selfless wonder, at that moment, that's prayer absolute. And you're expressing
yeah.
it forth.
Well, that's what, yeah, what I really got out of, what I really liked
Beautiful.
About what was being expressed this weekend was this idea that it doesn't, that what does prayer absolute look like? Well, it looks like this for David Franco, and it looks like this for Matt Lozowick, and it looks like this for Molly Midway, and it looks like this for Ivan, and for Simon, or for, different for everybody. It's going to be the way you do it.
So when we start to transfer the centrum of gravity, then we can begin to sniff what it's like to live in that particular world. And at that point, all of all of our centrums, we can harvest what we've learned before, and begin. It becomes. That's when I think Silverdale that it becomes food for the essential self. And the essential self is freed at that point to begin exercising its own muscles and to being something new and different.
And David, I might just say, as I've mentioned before, in my experience, recognition or cognition of our essential self is an awareness of, well, I, for myself, a vibratory sensation. I mean, it's something that is distinctly different from anything else I experience in the ordinary course of life. And by the way, I might say that's underscored in Jean de Saltzman's book, The Reality of Being, where more or less she indicates that the essential being as a vibratory sensation becomes the predominant seat of our experience. And that really, I think, is what the power center is all about.
And... But here's the, so for Silverdale, he used this word, vibratory sensation. That's a clue for me. But what specifically is it for me? What specifically is it for everybody on the chat, every single person, for Ivan, Matt, Molly? What is that? You have to sense it with your inner seeing and your, you sense where it is, and you go, ah, there it is. And when you're there, there's a level of certainty that is unquestionable. You stand in it, and you know. You are one that knows at that point. Then the waves and of the machine and of life sweep you out of it. But the more familiar you become with that sensation, the easier it is to get back to it. You can drive yourself back to it. And that's the whole where we can practice. That's what we can do. Maybe you're not in an environment here where there's a museum show to get up the next morning or 150 pieces that have to be framed or pairing the action list or something like that.
We don't have that going on right now.
We don't have it. But my point is, so we have to learn how can we translate these efforts and this sensitivity to individuals who sometimes, other than work like this online, are by themselves. It's to find that inner sensation, Ivan, and find,
right.
as Ivan's telling us, what is that prayer absolute? How does it work for you in your particular work? Let's say you're a waitress or a waiter. You know, my
That's
gosh,
a challenging one, Blaine.
What a wonderful, what a wonderful place to work.
That's very challenging.
you know, and to serve at that point. Now, you used the phrase, and I'm sure, knowing Kelly, she did it a number of times too, that when you're doing this, you're, some energy, it goes back up.
Well, you're sending. Yeah, Kelly is, by the way, in her book, she's very strong on this formulation that comes from EJ about reversing the pump, you know, which is from an earlier set of talks.
Yeah.
It's from the more fourth way related. But it's Kelly has a lot to say about that.
So when we can get ourselves in a place where we have transferred the life of this machine, and where the new driver then is the essential self and not the mechanicality of the old machine, something new is possible. Then truly we can serve.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good, I think we're arriving at a good formulation here. I just wanted to add, maybe this is a footnote, but to be sure, I'm sure everybody has heard this because, again, like you said, we've been through the third or fourth book that we've been through, and for some people it's several cycles. But, you know, we're talking about changing streams and the new life, you know, the vida nuova or whatever, you know, stabilizing the life of the essence, the life of the essential self. But not to forget that EJ also says in many places and many reminders that it's, his teaching is that it's pathological to want to be in the waking state at all times, continuously. To be at the machine in the waking state constantly is not a desirable outcome. And so, but I heard David touching on that. It's like, yeah, you have the sensing, and you sense the moods and atmospheres, and you know what the signs are, and you have the feeling for your own. It's your own, what Silverdale said, self-observation and self-remembering, and you know, so, you know, we have to get over this fear of being in the waking state, and then also have to get over this fear of going back into the sleeping state,
and
because it's, the idea is that when it's called upon, when the moment is right, or when there's an obligation to be performed, you need to be able to get yourself into the waking state.
That's correct.
But it's actually, and I think you had a great example in this hour, that Nijinsky's madness is probably an example of someone
who,
you know, let the thing be out of control. It's like, just want to be in the waking state, to be in the unity, in the oneness, you know, with the other world, or with the world of essence, or the, you know, get in touch with the absolute all the time, every day, every time I dance, every time I get up, every time I eat, or whatever. It can be pathological.
And I think that,
yeah, that's what EJ says that somewhere. Well, what's the use of being a guru if you're like a baby in diapers and people have to wipe you?
So we get to a place where we start to have a sense of what it means to be of service, where you can actually be of service, but you have to get yourself to that point. So we can do our work. This isn't so that you have a better life, that your people like you, any of that stuff. It has to do with taking this mechanism that we're working with and structuring it in such a way that you can be of objective service. And when you are truly in the sense of the essential self, maybe at that point, if your work is starting to mature, then you can be of service in that manner. You can be of service. And, you know, we talk about, so the last sentence there, now essence will be able to remain exposed and in control of the organism, responsible for itself for the first time in life. And that's what we have as that opportunity. And so the practice here, and to be practical, is when you are find yourself in that state of the high invocation where that power centrum is working through you, note what it's like. Sense yourself. Sense what it's like. Self-remember that self. Because sometimes it's going to be important to go into that waking state when you're called upon. Mm-hmm. And when you're called upon, you got to be ready. You got to be ready at that time you have the possibility of practicing so you know how to get there when it's important to get there. You won't know when that moment comes. You won't know when the accident occurs in front of you that you are then called upon to act in a certain manner. It will be by accident. I don't mean like necessarily like an auto accident, though it might be.
Well, then on the other hand, there, the other thing then, you know, again, on the prayer absolute theme, DJ is also emphasizing that there, that, you know, that if you want to be hit by lightning, you know, you go out in the field in the storm. And that, you know, that there, you can put yourself in the place where you're more likely to be hit by lightning.
Yeah.
Because that is the going in the service direction, let's say, in our metaphor. And it's prayer absolute. This is, if you want to be a lightning handler, it's no good to stay inside and eat pizza.
Simon, can you read the comments that are on there, please?
I David, you hear me?
Yeah.
There is, somehow I have lost the trace of the, I was listening to you attentively, and I have lost the trace of the comments. I may try some.
What you can find.
Piangio says, could George's explanation and Ivan's addendum or a condensation of it be posted on Wings of Chaos? That's a question.
Yes.
Molly Midway, it's a comment that she was doing to referring a previous comment from Molly that she says that now that she's older, about an attitude that is easier when we are younger. But she says now, well, I am afraid, not foolhardily, and afraid I was when younger. So I have to realize the day-to-day work of self-observation happens even though it is less dramatic.
Yes. Yes. Good. Day-to-day work of self-observation. That's, we're called upon to do this kind of work. It's constant heavy lifting that we do. And we do it to get ourselves and place ourselves in those positions. As you understand some of this a little more and place yourself in a position of necessity, then you are a channel whereby the work can move through you and certain things are possible for you to do. So, on that note...
Good formulation.
Thank you. And on that note, we're going to call it an evening.
It's an evening.
So, thanks for coming again, everybody. It's Wednesday. We're done with this one. We'll see you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock and see what we get into then.
Thanks, yeah. David and Ivan, for hosting
tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.